let's jump right into our time together today with a couple of readings. Actually, it's a short couple of verses and then a quote that I want to share with you. The verses come from Proverbs. I'm reading from chapter 31, and it's just verses 8 and 9, and this is from the NRSV updated edition. Hear now these words. Speak out for those who cannot speak, for the rights of all the destitute. Speak out. Judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. Then I have a brief quote that I want to share with you from one of the world's best-known authors, and I think more importantly, a former Wake Forest University professor. You know, we beat Duke yesterday. We beat Duke. Thank you for that very much. Yeah. But Maya Angelou, one of my all-time favorites, who had this to say: "I'm convinced of this. Good done anywhere is good done everywhere. For a change, start by speaking to people rather than walking by them like they are stones that don't matter. As long as you are breathing, it's never too late to do some good."
So I did this song when I, you know, when I was first here, a couple of years ago, written by Cynthia Erivo, who, British, who played Seeley in the revisioning of The Color Purple, that was directed by John Doyle. I got to see her on Broadway. She is, hands down, has got to be, and has been for a few years now, my favorite singer. You have got to check her out, no matter what she sings or where she sings it. She played Harriet Tubman in the movie Harriet. So if you, I would encourage you to see it. If you haven't, if whatever your streaming platform is, it's really worthwhile seeing. And she wrote this song for that movie. If you hear her sing it, it's something. So this is in the voice of Harriet Tubman, which I may or may not have any right to sing. But nonetheless, this is the song that she wrote in Harriet Tubman's voice. I've been walking, face turning to the sun.
I've got eyes on the back of my head.
Changing from time to time, then, well, you're not taking it seriously enough. So, I have to say, admittedly, when it comes to my call story, well, it comes from a time when my theology, well, it was progressive in matters of social justice and that type of thing. It was somewhat ill-informed in terms of modern thought and theology. So, not surprisingly, the way I experienced my call, well, was very different from how I might experience it now, today, my current theology. I've shared parts of this before, but for the sake of those who maybe haven't heard it, and I know there are a few, let me quickly tell you about my call story. If I'm brutally honest with myself, was something in me that was being called. You can see me do this a lot when I say called, just because I understand it differently now. But there was something in me that was being called into ministry when I was in junior high, or middle school as we call it now. I could actually take you back to First Presbyterian Church in Ashgrove and sit you almost exactly in the spot where I was when I moved. But from time to time, as I grew up, the call, you know, it would tug at me, but I would dismiss it, or I would basically make the argument that God was wrong about this one. So, some 25 years after I first felt it, the calling thing was still persistent, but it was becoming more and more insistent. It was almost like a record constantly skipping in my head. No matter what I did, it wouldn't go away. I would dismiss it or I would deny it. I'd even taken to giving these signs that needed to happen for me to believe it was really some kind of a call, then the signs would happen. And then I would, I'd add another sign that needed to happen. I was about to add another such sign to try to shut off this constant head game that God and I were playing. At least that's how I saw it back then. I was about to add another sign that needed to happen when the Christian radio station I was listening to, yes, I actually listened to Christian radio back then, when the Christian radio station I was listening to aired a commercial that I would shortly later describe as God hitting me across the back of the head with a 2x4. It was so striking. I remember everything about that day. I was driving my white Chevy S10 pickup, heading north on Holden, and I was about to hit that intersection right there at Florida Street. An advertisement encouraging people to get more to their church came on the radio. And the guy on the commercial said something like, I'll give more to the church if this dime lands on his heads. You can hear him flip it, it hits the ground, lands on his heads. Then he said, well, if it lands on its tails and flips it, lands on its tails. And finally he says, if it lands on its side, presumably setting a benchmark that can't be achieved by, and justifying his decision that he already wanted to make to not give any more to his church. So you hear him flip the coin. You hear the coin hit the floor. You hear it roll around for a few seconds, and then he says, never seen that before. It had landed on its side. And at that point, I basically thought to myself, I have been running from this for many years. If it takes many years to get back to it, so be it. As I said, our theology seems to play a large role in how we see and understand the idea of call. Just a month or so later, I had said, I've been running for a long time. If it takes a long time to get back to it, then so be it. And honestly, I was kind of hoping that it would take a long time to get back to it. A month or so later, I'm standing in a 3-room cinder block home that I'm helping build for a family who'd never had a roof over their heads in Piedras Negras, in a section of town that is nothing more than a covered over city dump called Tierra y Esperanza, or the Land of Hope. I'm in a not quite finished room with the Reverend Dr. Bob Henderson, and he says, So, how's work? And at the time, I was the director of information and the personnel director for a mid-sized retail organization. I said, work is work. He said, that never really seemed like what you should be doing. And from there, the talk went to ministry and divinity school and how that could happen and what the church might do to help in my recognition of my call. And a few months later, I'm standing alone in my driveway, literally tears in my eyes, as what I understood the unthinkable had happened, and Wake Forest University School of Divinity had accepted me as a student. I had tried to deny it. I tried to run from it. I tried to then define the timeline for it to happen, but the theology I had at the time told me, at the time, God obviously had a different plan. So, when I think about being called, particularly in the ministry, I can't help but think of one of my personal heroes, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He knew of the perils of being called into ministry, of accepting the call, of standing up against powerful people who use and abuse others. It's a wild and a lonely path to follow. It will cause people's ears to burn, and you will face difficult times, as was told to me by that same minister, Reverend Henderson, and as I tell anyone talking to me about filling the call into ministry, if there is anything else you can do, you should do it. Dr. King knew of the perils of trying to speak truth to a world that at times may not want to hear or may not be able to hear it. In January of 1956, Dr. King was finding it difficult to sleep. See, the Montgomery bus boycott had heated up, and he had a call late that night, not a call from God, but rather it was a call threatening to harm him and his family. We know the story of Dr. King. That moment was the beginning of his calling to be a national leader, and it would push Dr. King to confront many of the injustices in our nation. It would be a somewhat lonely road for him. There would be many sleepless nights as pressure, anxiety, and worries that can come with confronting powerful people would bubble up inside of him. It would have been easy to see the difficult road ahead, to listen to the many detractors, those threatening to kill him. It would have been easy to see and hear all of that and run away, but he did not. He stood up. The reality is that it's not easy to stand up. Despite the fact that my call story happened quite some time ago, it's only been in the last 15-ish years or so that I have become known for being outspoken about the importance of equality and compassion, about the dangers of institutionalized religion, about the dangers of capitalism, about the dangers of mixing church and state, about the need for a more modern understanding of spirituality. I don't mind telling you, I've thought about walking away from it more than a few times. I've lost a job over doing it. I've dealt with some pretty nasty feedback on pretty much a daily basis online, constantly. And I've actually received two legitimate death threats. Standing up is not easy. Standing up is not simple, but standing up to the powerful who belittle and berate those who already struggle. Standing up for those who are marginalized, maligned, and mistreated. Standing up because no human is illegal. Standing up because Black Lives Matter, because love is love, because women's rights are human's rights. Standing up because we are better than this, or at least we should be striving to be better. Standing up for equality and compassion is needed. It is necessary. As Dr. King once put it, the ultimate measure of a person is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, but where they stand at times of challenge and controversy. And here's the thing, not standing up, it's all too easy. It can even seem all too reasonable, and it happens all too frequently. While it was a different time, I think Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail says it well. He put it this way in that letter. I must make two honest confessions to you, my Christian and Jewish brothers. First, I must confess that over the past few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I've almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride towards freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who consistently says, I agree with you in the goal that you seek, but I cannot agree with your method of direct action, who paternalistically believes he can set the time timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. In his letter in recognition of Dr. King's Day a few years ago, the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. had this to say about the best way to stand up and do what Dr. King fought so hard for. He said that the best way most of us can stand up for all the things that Dr. King stood for is, quote, is to get registered to vote and then to cast ballots in massive and historic numbers. Stand up and be counted and encourage and help others to do the same. Now, I'm not sure that is the best way, but it is certainly a very good way. In my opinion, it matters more this election year, probably more than ever. So some final words from Dr. King. He said, you may be 38 years old as I happen to be, and one day some great opportunity stands before you and calls you to stand up for some great principle, some great issue, some great cause, and you refuse to do it because you are afraid. You refuse to do it because you want to live longer. You're afraid that you will lose your job, or you are afraid that you will be criticized, or that you will lose your popularity, or you're afraid that someone will stab you or shoot you or bomb your house, so you refuse to take the stand. Well, you may go on and live to be 90, but you're just as dead at 38 as you will be at 90. And the cessation of breathing in your life is but the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. So, I encourage you, when you are called, stand up.
song I had in mind to play. That was when Mark was talking. We're doing a last second change here. In the 1960s, one of the popular groups was called the Rascals. And this is one of their songs. All the world over, so easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Listen, please listen, that's the way it should be. Peace in the valley, people gotta be free. You should see what a lovely, lovely world this could be. Everyone learns to live together. Seems to me such an itty-itty thing should be. Why can't you and me learn to love one another? Love, love, love. Now all the world over, so easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. I can't understand, it's so simple to me. People everywhere just gotta be free. There's a man who is down and needs a helping hand. All it takes is you to understand him, to pull him through. Seems to me we gotta solve it individually. And I'll do unto you what you do to me. Shouting from the mountains on out to the sea. No two ways about it, people gotta be free. Ask me my opinion will be. Natural situation for a man to be free.
Sometimes find it difficult to be the people we should be. The world tells us that sharing of our abundance will eventually leave us no better off than those we are helping. The world tells us that making sure we have an advantage over others will give us a happier life. The world tells us that power is good, that being in charge is the best way to get what we want. May we learn the error of our ways of this world. May we become aware of the abundance in this world so that all people may be cared for. May our eyes be opened to the reality that real happiness comes from equality, knowing that all of humanity is cared for. As we stand up and put these things into practice, may we learn them anew every day, every hour, every minute. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those you meet.
This next song,
Stephanie told me Joyce requested it. Joyce, all right. Among other songs, but this is one that got passed along to me, so I learned to play this. It's a beautiful song by a songwriter called Bill Staines called Quiet Faith of Man.
One day faith was born along the highway, a timely, helpless thing upon the sand. An Okie with a dream out on the byway took the babe and held it proudly in his hand. And the woman smiled a gentle smile of knowing and whispered something softly in his ear. Perhaps a little prayer to help me growing. Perhaps a word of comfort through the fear. And you can trust the moon to move the mighty ocean. And you can trust the sun to shine upon the land. You take the little that you know, and you do the best you can. And you see the rest in the quiet face of man. Chapter makes its way along the fence line. The seeds are dropped precisely in the road. If the rain is kind and the window take the topsoil, before too long the crops will start to show. And the farmer sees the fields around him bright. He whispers something low beneath his breath. Perhaps a little prayer to help the growing. Perhaps a word of thanks for all the rest. And you can trust the moon to move the mighty ocean. You can trust the sun to shine upon the land. You take the little that you know, and you do the best you can. And you see the rest with quiet faith of man. There's a storm-tossed ship tonight out on the water. There's a soul that sails alone out on the blue. There's a dreamer with his eye upon the heavens. They're all looking for a way to make it through. And you can trust the moon to move the mighty ocean. You can trust the sun to shine upon the land. Take the little that you know, and you do the best you can, and you see the rest in the quiet face of man. And you can trust the moon to move the mighty ocean, and you can trust the sun to shine upon the land. You take the little that you know, and you do the best you can. You see the rest in the quiet faith of man.